Tim O'Malley. I'm Tim Priester, and this is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. It's Monday, March 27th, and Tim, we had finally an opportunity to really observe Notre Dame over the weekend. I took part in the coaches' clinic, so got exposure to a little bit more of the action, and we want to kind of jump around from position by position, but let's start with a couple of players that really stand out to us. And I know we addressed this in the instant analysis after the practice on Saturday, but some of the guys that you're most excited about.
Starting with the guys I wasn't sure I would be the best way of looking
at it. Yeah.
Tony Jones Jr. was probably the best. He was the standout player of Saturday's practice because from beginning to end, he made plays. And making plays in 11-on-11 scrimmage is a lot different than one-on-ones when you're wide receiver versus running back or wide receiver versus defensive back. So he comes to mind, and I think that's a great thing because I believe Tony Jones Jr. is not the best back on the team. Right. So that's great that a guy like that is developing. We've been talking about Chase Claypool since the first time we saw him cover a kickoff. He's obviously pushing to be a frontline starter, whether they use him as an X receiver instead of Kevin Steverson, whether he's a detached tight end and Alize Jones is outside, I don't know yet, but he gets open and he makes plays. Now, he's not a finished product. I know we've been hyping him quite a bit, but he had a couple concentration drops, I think, during that, but you can't look at him and not think that guy's going to help Notre Dame next fall. And on the other end, I just think we mentioned it in instant analysis, Nick Watkins just carries himself like he's a starting cornerback. He used to be a guy that looked like, hey, he could be good someday, and now it's just, did he miss last year? He comes out there and he plays like a starting.
He looks like he is a veteran.
Yeah, and he's not perfect either, but he attacks the ball, he's confident.
And the great thing about that is on the opposite side of the field from Watkins is Julian Love, who, and you mentioned it Saturday, and I saw the same things on Friday and Saturday. He's just around the football.
Yeah, he's their best corner. Yeah. So it's good that we're talking about the other guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are real positives. We're going to get into the defensive line and some of the issues that we think are happening there. Alize Jones continues to impress. The tight end core looks very impressive. I like what's happening on the offensive line. Alex Barr's move inside the right guard is something that, you know, I felt like needed to be done at some point. I realized last year the situation.
Yeah, they couldn't do it.
He had to play right tackle. But the battle going between Liam Eikenberg and Tommy Kramer is interesting. They've alternated days. Kramer's a bigger body. Eikenberg is a little bit more mobile, which translates to, you know, pass blocking a little bit better. I don't know how that's going to end up. And we've said this also in the past, I think Eikenberg fits the position better than Kramer does. And here's what's happening. I think we keep saying, he's a better guard than tackle. You got to have tackles.
Yeah, you do.
Clearly, like a McGlinchey is a tackle, but, you know, Robert Hainsey, who's working a tackle, is he a tackle or is he a guard? I mean, I think we had some questions during the recruiting process. Josh Lugg, who was in attendance at practice, fits the tackle spot. But I look at Tommy Kramer as a big body that looks like, you know, more of an interior player. So, you know, that's a bit of an issue. They have to address that, and that's why I think Eikenberg ultimately wins that job.
And it's a four-month battle. We're not figuring out that at the outset of August camp. I don't think, I know you want to get your best five in there. You know, I think it might come down to there, how much better is Eikenberg at pass protection than Kramer is as a physical presence in the run game? Because if Kramer is much better in the run game, then maybe you can live with a couple mistakes because you can
point.
Be a power offense.
Yeah.
But if it's negligible and Eikenberg rises to the occasion and is also very good in the run game, then maybe you go with a guy who, and Brian Kelly's even offered, he's longer, and that means pass protection. Without saying he's better in pass protection, he said he's better in pass protection.
Right. I think that's a good point because I think Kramer is a quality power run blocker. The question is whether he can hold up on the edge. I'm not sure that that's a good fit for what his body is now.
What if he, and this would be, obviously you don't know this until he goes against other players, but let's say he is better in pass protection than Steve Elmer was in his first bout at right tackle, but not as good as Barr's last year, so he's in between. Because Barr's was a little, they had to move Elmer out of the position.
Tough, but right. Brian Kelly pretty much named Alex Barr's as starting right guard.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's moving. I'm saying this is against Eikenberg. What if Kramer's somewhere in that realm?
I see what you're saying.
Do you go with it?
I don't know, because I think Eikenberg is certainly capable as a run blocker. But we haven't seen enough of these guys. We're way speculating here. But, the quarterback looks pretty good, too.
He does. And I think we wrote about this on the message board. we're not going to have bad things to report on Brandon Wimbush. We won't know. He looks good. He can run. He can throw. He's smart. He's intelligent. He's a good interview. He's dedicated. He makes the throws that you need in Chip Long's offense, it appears, too. And we won't know until the chips are down.
We're not going to know how he, exactly how he reads defenses until he gets in those situations and where we have exposure to those situations. And yeah, you're right, because, I mean, the kid passes the eye test, and I made the physical, the athletic comparison to a Tony Rice.
Oh, yeah, that's a good comparison.
And I think, but then I saw him run a read option, fake it, and hit the corner incredibly fast with power. And you walk away from that, and what you're saying is exactly true. There are no physical traits we're going to look at and say, you know, he's lacking a little bit here athletically or physically. He's a real deal in that regard.
I think his greatest weakness for this team is there's one of him. Yeah. Because the drop-off is pretty big, I believe, to Ian Book.
Yeah, no doubt.
Not that Ian Book can't win you a game, but you're not contending for anything.
I'm not really sure Ian Book's a better prospect than or a better player right now than Montgomery Van Gorder.
Right, well, it's... Yeah, he would have to be. You would hope he would be by mid-August, right?
You would hope, but Van Gorder has better size. I can't even believe that we're talking about that. But I mean, ultimately, you're right. Book's a scholarship guy, and he's going to be the number two guy.
That's my point. That's the drop-off, as we're talking about. That's the issue with Wimbush.
And then Avery Davis, of course, comes in August. But let's go over the defensive side of the ball, and there's been some discussion on our message board about this. I talked about the lack of talent along the defensive line, and some of our subscribers took offense with that.
I think we should just keep talking about offense the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, honestly. I know, because this is and I wrote a story this morning, and I don't think I fully realized just what the defensive line situation was until I went through the interview with Mike Elston, and then you start putting together a story, and I don't care how many four-star guys are listed there. It just, first of all, star ratings until they come to Notre Dame, and then they put a Notre Dame uniform on, and then they start to practice, and then you watch what they can and can't do.
And then they don't matter, right?
And then it doesn't matter. And man, when I look at this defensive line, it is not in good shape.
No, it's not now. I guess, where can they get? Is what matters. Now, you know, Mike Elko even brought up the defense. Look, we're not even close. We shouldn't be close. I don't expect to be close. But the talent level on the back seven versus the front four, and I'm throwing out stars because we watched them play, it's a staggering difference to me. Now, I think Pete made a good point that maybe Tillery could be a difference maker at that spot. I have long held the fact that Daniel Cage can be very solid. I said he'd be a great backup nose tackle, and that's what he is right now. If he could be a good backup to Tillery, then you're at least starting from the middle.
Right.
But then you need people to step up that haven't. Jay Hayes, we've been talking about for 4 years. He has to be twice as good as ever.
Here's the thing with Jay Hayes, and I was premature when we did our instant analysis. I said, speaking of men, or you said Jay Hayes, Dalen Hayes. Let me just jump into him first. I said, speaking of men, Dalen Hayes, and I should have really checked with you first because I was on offense and you were on defense, and he was impressive as far as athleticism and getting in position, but we don't know what kind of physicality he's going to have. He's in a two-point stance because he has no background in a three-point stance.
Yeah, we don't know anything about this front. And you mentioned right before we started the podcast, what do we know what Khalid Kareem can do against Georgia?
We have not seen Khalid, and we only get to see glimpses, but I have not seen Khalid Kareem make a play. We haven't seen him much. We haven't seen much of anything. But I haven't seen him make a play.
I think, and you have to remember that, sure, there's some young promise when you have Okwara, Dalen Hayes, Khalid Kareem, but promise doesn't matter in September when they have to win three of those four games, at least. What they really need, and you talked about a guy you think will battle, and I'm not sure he's in the right position, but he has to play there. Jonathan Bonner is now a senior that will battle. Jay Hayes has to be a senior that is, we know he's competitive, that will battle for more than 10 snaps. You need some of these guys that haven't done anything, going to their redshirt junior technical senior years to become football players because they just haven't been in the mix that much.
No.
And now they're going to be completely.
I think Jay Hayes is a football player. Is he a difference maker? I would say probably not, but he's a football player. And Elston mentioned the other day, he's 280. He has to be on the field, whether that's ideal. It's an ideal size in what Elko wants. I don't know, but he has to be on the football field. In discussing Trumbetti.
Are you puzzled by the move
of
Trombetti and Jay Hayes battling out on that end. Why not have Dalen Hayes and Trombetti?
Because O'Quara can't play on the other side.
Right. That's...
I mean, because he's a senior in it. But here's the thing. Talking to Elston, and Jack was there when he was filming it. He has short arms, okay, for the position compared to O'Quara and Ogundeji. So, I mean, they have frames that you like at that position. We know he's not a power guy. Okay, so how is he going to get on the field, and how can he be effective at that position? It has to be Jay Hayes. It has to be Dalen Hayes on the other side with O'Quara.
And Trombetti could be, and obviously in sub packages, you're putting him in as another pass rusher opposite Dalen Hayes.
And we've said this, and I'm going to continue to say it because this is just reality. Their sacks and their pressure up front is going to come through Mike Elko's scheme. It's the only way it can happen. There is not the individual talent that you need to beat people one-on-one. Now, Elko did it at Wake Forest. And if he can do that at Wake Forest against ACC competition, he can do it at Notre Dame. I just can't envision it based upon the components seeing moving around there. We haven't even talked about Jerry Tiller yet, who Mike Elston is saying, you know, I think that he's dedicated himself. I think that he's gotten to the point where...
It's not what you want to hear going into the junior year.
Yeah. No. And he acknowledges he has outside interests, you know, and that he is coming in and watching a lot more film. Elston will be eating lunch, and Tillery will come in and sit down and watch the same stuff with him. But, man, that's not enough. Now, getting back to Bonner, I think the reason Bonner is a starter right now is because they are trying to be more aggressive in the gaps. It's the way that Elko runs. And I thought that was what Van Gorder was when he came in. But when Romeo O'Quara and Sheldon Day left, I think they had to take more of a hold the point of attack and let guys make plays. So I think that's why Bonner's in the starting lineup now and Cage isn't, because there are apparently no physical restrictions. As Elston said, if there were physical restrictions on Cage with his concussions, he wouldn't be out there. So why is it Bonner and Tillery instead of Cage and Tillery? And my answer to that is because I think Bonner is much more capable of being disruptive in the gaps.
And then if he can be, it gives you a fighting chance inside, because you can't have Tillery play 80 plays either. If you have Tillery and Cage as your 1-2 punch at nose tackle, I'm fine starting that season out. That's... Hey, maybe Cage isn't also in playing shape.
Yeah, but now, how many snaps can Bonner take it? Elijah Taylor got hurt.
That's the problem, because no matter what they say about coming back from a Liz Frank injury and running around, look, it's going to be questionable whether he's going to contribute the first month of the season.
It will be questionable in August as to whether he can. Now, I mean, everybody heals differently.
Sure. Jerron took a year. Jerron Jones told me in season last year, I don't remember which game it was, but we're into October. My knee has been fine for a while. It's my foot. And he injured his foot 10 months before injuring his knee. So we're looking at almost 22 months later. Jerron Jones is built differently than Elijah Taylor, obviously. But that's a scary thing that people, and as Pete said, Justin Brent, now it's not because of his foot, but Justin Brent got a Liz Frank injury and never played again.
Right.
So obviously that's not all his injury, but you never know. Elijah Taylor was our guy on this podcast that might make a move up to be a quality number two. And now they don't have him in the mix, so it's up to Mike to
Now the back, now the backup is what did Elston? He called Mike Dutredway a big thing, a putty.
A putty, yeah, he's a big thing, a putty. Yeah, he meant it in a moldable way.
No, absolutely, and I do think it's more important to Dutredway now, and I do think he's working hard, and I've always said that he has some athleticism and he's got a good frame, but. We're talking about the University of Notre Dame taking on much improved, much more difficult schedule next year. And so we've probably dwelled on this enough and bummed people out as much as we need to.
Go back to the offense. Let's talk about LSA Jones. Well, that's good.
Now, I do the linebacking core, I think, is really, really good. I love the Tranquil Blau combo at Rover. Martini Acone at Buck. That's a good group. And Niles Morgan is Niles Morgan. But did you see the hit that Jonathan Jones had on Saturday?
Yes, I did. And the compliment I can pay to the linebackers, when I was watching the defense, I was watching the defensive line of the secondary the whole time, because I know what they have. The linebackers will be good next year.
Yeah. And Jameer Jones, was he at Mike? He was at Mike also?
Yeah, which means it'll be interesting. I bet he gets moved around a little, because I think they'll like Jonathan Jones as a backup Mike linebacker. So Jameer... Maybe he moves, tells his little dad somewhere else.
You remember Bobby Howard?
Yeah, I love Bobby Howard.
I mean, I mean the undersized, so you're going to make that kind of comparison. But I think he's a little bit more outgoing than Bobby Howard. Bobby Howard was the most close to the vest. I once did a story on Bobby Howard and didn't have a quote from him. I just talked to everybody else around him and let them talk about what a great guy he was. But anyway, I think Jonathan Jones is a player, and that's a good core. And we talked about the cornerbacks and the safeties. There's talent. I just don't know how it's all going to shake out at this point.
Yes, safeties will be interesting. We should evaluate them in August when we see our two or four hours of open practices in August, because they don't know what they're doing there yet. I think Elko's trying to find the right fit. It's Tranquil back at safety to me is they need help communicating, and he's our communicator. He's going to be Rover. You talked about this. You've been talking about this for months.
It's just counterproductive to put him back there, because you're going to go against Elko's principle of putting somebody in a position to do something you can't do.
Exactly. So I think, you know, Isaiah Robertson in early, it'll help in August. He took a couple bad angles on long runs, I noticed. Yeah. Fertitta is a player when he's not matched in coverage. He can't be in coverage. That's
again, short space is better than big space.
They'll bring him in when they need him there.
So that comes down to Studstill and Elliott and Coleman. And those are good enough athletes.
The Coleman thing is so strange to me only because it's weird that we open spring with Nick Coleman as a starting safety. But he does make some plays. He made plays all of August. There was no one at corner. There was no one more surprised than me that he got torched at Texas. I thought he was a competitive guy that would play well. And I think he just lost his confidence when it happened. I mean, it couldn't have been worse to start his starting career.
Yeah. And he couldn't recover from that September. It was the great thing is that Mike Elko coaches safeties.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real, real plus under the circumstances because it's a little bit muddled back there. All right, well, we've got, do we want to get into recruiting? Yeah, we do. We want to get that. John Dirksen is
four-star from Ohio, second offensive line commit, and Pete's mentioned at least three are coming in, and I would assume four because you've got to replace what you lose.
Yeah.
You're going to be, Quentin Nelson's not coming back for a fifth. So.
man, I tell you, I think it was shortly after signing day, and it was a Sunday. And I sat down and looked at five guys, like, who might be next. And I had no preconceived notions about anybody. Lindsey was in that group, and he was very, very impressive. Dirksen stood out to me. I mean, absolutely stood out. And I know is he a guard or a tackle? Yeah. And maybe he doesn't have the stature to be. That is a naturally aggressive, proactive, confident football player. I love the pickup. When I heard he was coming in this weekend, I wondered if they had a shot. Wasn't he originally as a three-star?
Yeah,
he got bumped up. I don't know what the heck is going on with his offer list. I don't get it. I don't care. I mean, again, that's like four. You know, we talked about four-star, three-star. You got to pass the eye test. That's a good football player.
Right, and we talk about natural guard or natural tackle. It's better to have a naturally great guard than a guy that might be able to play tackle. If he's just an excellent guard, that's fine. They are a little light, maybe going forward on tackles.
We keep talking guards, and that's a concern. Yeah, I know that's a concern.
You only need to find two tackles, right?
Just two, man. Just two. Two at a time.
Lug's a tackle. I mean, maybe it could be a tackle.
And I'm not saying Dirksen can't play right tackle. I just... He is so explosive in short space that's just the best usage of him. When I say he's a guard, that doesn't necessarily mean he can't play tackle. It's just where can you maximize the abilities that you have? And that's why I've always thought Alex Barnes, he could play tackle. I think he could adapt to right tackle. But if he's going to play in the NFL, if Zach Martin's playing guard in the NFL, then that's
the ultimate compliment.
Yeah, exactly. We saw Zach Martin over the weekend. And Nick. Nick is a big dude.
Wow. When he stood, and the Notre Dame official kind of said this to me, you look at Nick Martin stand next to Mustafer, and this is not a knock on Mustafer. Sam's a normal size center. Nick Martin is a big dude, and he made a great career choice when he, quote-unquote, took one for the team and moved from guard to center because that moved him up two rounds of the draft. And, well, he is huge. I know Notre Dame fans love hearing this, but he got a lot bigger, too, since he left Notre Dame.
Yeah, and it's Zach Martin is a lot wider than he used to be. He's got the width of a guard now.
Someone said to me at the coach's clinic, they're like, man, Nick looks a lot bigger than Zach, and I think he is. Until Zach gets out pulling, and he's coming at him, and he's got Ezekiel Elliott behind him, then he looks pretty big, too.
I've got so much respect for Zach Martin. I love the kid when he was at Notre Dame. And, here he is, he comes back, and he was, He wasn't giving pointers. He was coaching Saturday.
He was coaching Saturday. Yeah. And he was coaching guys that he didn't know.
Right.
It wasn't like it was just McGlinchey who he played with. He has no connection to anyone but McGlinchey, and then Barz and Nelson would be on the team. So he would, as we know, the offensive line lineage with starting with Zach Martin is you guys are together at all times. Yeah. And Nick Martin, that's I want to end this segment with, I really like the offensive line. At this point, the change I've seen up there, they just look more physical to me. And we have plenty of time to talk about that in burning up the boards, but I like the way they look. With
of course, they are going against that defensive line now.
Yeah, they're dominating the Nordic defensive line. It just couldn't be a problem there, right? There's
no... I would agree. You know, I would agree with that. And I think that, you know, again, just physically looking at McGlinchey. And here's the point with the whole strength and conditioning, and I think it's overblown about, you know, I mean, they're not starting completely from scratch. It's not like they have to make up for 4 years, but something slipped. There's no doubt about that. And here's what I love. You take body fat off, because a lot of people are looking at this team right now and saying, well, they don't look that much bigger. You don't get that big that quickly. I mean, let's be real about this. The first thing you have to do is get rid of the bad weight. Get rid of the body fat. You have from now until August to build back up. And again, you're not going to bridge the gap completely then either. But this stuff doesn't happen overnight. And the first thing you need to do is get rid of the body fat. And I think they've gone a long way towards achieving that.
I can't talk about the strength and condition without getting angry, so we should move on. How do you waste a year?
With that, you don't want to see Tim O'Malley angry. With that, we're going to end segment two. We'll be back with questions from our readers. Burning up the boards is our second segment of Irish Illustrated Insider. We start with a question from DIP98. From what you saw this weekend, which former Notre Dame player does Tony Jones Jr. remind you of the most?
This one took me a car ride to come up with, but I think I have a good body comparison and skill set, and I'm going to pay for this one in October when people remind me of going back to the Lou Holtz Halcyon days, but Rodney Culver is the guy, the late Rodney Culver, with the same frame, 6 feet, 225, compact power, quick feet, can catch the ball, not top-end speed. Culver looked a little bigger, but he wasn't, because it was a different era. He was bigger than the guys trying to tackle him.
He looked bulkier.
Yeah, I thought shoulder pads were bigger,
too. They were a lot bigger then. They were a lot bigger. You know, I hesitate with comparisons many times, as I was saying before we were recording. I hesitate because I'm so old that it spans so many different generations of football players. So I'm not going to make comparison. I'm just going to say that I like Tony Jones an awful lot. He hits the hole very quickly. His pad level is good. He's difficult to tackle. I think I said this Saturday in our incident analysis, he's everything that we saw in high school film, but you're never sure whether that's going to carry over to the college level. He's now playing behind an offensive line that's in better condition and getting a little more push against a questionable defensive line, and he was hitting it Saturday.
I'm going to put Culver highlights against Tennessee on the message board for everyone to look at.
Okay,
and
then you can tell you guys
look at that. And also, Tim was going to say Bronco Nagurski, but he didn't want to pull that one out.
Bronco Nagurski.
Next one is from RKCUND68. With what we've heard, is an improved and more aggressive offensive line. Is there any real evidence of the defensive line moving toward owning the line of scrimmage and penetrating?
Well, owning the line of scrimmage and penetrating are kind of two different things, or at least I look at them differently. Owning the line of scrimmage is holding the point of attack, and they're trying to be more aggressive. You could be more aggressive when Sheldon Day was flying through, you know, gaps, and when you had Romeo Okwara coming off the edge. They couldn't play with that style last year because you didn't have the players that were going to be able to succeed in that endeavor. Let's put it that way. We talked extensively about the defensive line. I just don't see it right now. I think guys like Darnell Yule absolutely has to come in and make a contribution in some fashion. I don't know if Kurt Hinnish will be physically prepared to do that. Tagovailoa, that's a longer body who's kind of a part end, part defensive tackle, but you don't know whether he's physically prepared to come in. Man, I tell you what, I look at this off this freshman class, and you're really hoping that they can make some kind of contribution.
I think you're right, and that's what it will be. But I wish the storyline in August would be, yeah, we'll probably play Yule, but you know what? Jay Hayes and Jonathan Bonner, we love what they've been doing all camp. These are seniors that have been in there. You got to hope Notre Dame's not relying on two defensive line freshmen instead of Jay Hayes and Jonathan Bonner.
Well,
right?
True. Although I think...
Oh, heavy rotation would be great.
Yeah,
10 guys.
I think Yule... I'm hopeful that he comes in with a greater amount of strength than you normally see in a freshman interior defensive lineman. And, you know, I mean, Jay Hayes, Bonner, Tillery, can they hold a point of attack? Yeah, I think they can. Can they be playmakers? That's a big question. And the difference between holding point of attack and being playmakers is playing on one side of the line of scrimmage or the other.
Do you think that they will... I shouldn't say finally. Do you think they will go to a heavy rotation? At least 8 guys playing a lot on the defensive front. Can the backups be good enough? Because Cage is good enough to play as a backup, obviously. Can they get 8 Cage? Maybe Cage, Ewell, Aquara, and somebody else behind. And maybe it's Trombetti or Khalid Kareem. Can you get 8 guys? 8 guys to contribute each week? Because I feel like they need it.
I understand that, but you're having a hard enough time putting a quality starting lineup out there. And now we're talking about going too deep. I hear what you're saying. And I don't want to underestimate what Daniel Cage has done and is capable of doing. It's a huge body, and it's a guy that they need in the mix, whether Yule plays or not. Right. They need him in the mix. I mean, you know, how many reps can Bonner take?
Yeah, especially inside.
Right, exactly. So,
do you rotate just to, I mean, you have to rotate just to save them, maybe.
Probably in situations, certain instances. Brian Kelly said, or who was it that said our first 4 games are against
power running teams?
Yeah, it was Kelly that said that. So, wow, all hands on deck. You know, no doubt that's the situation that they're in. And I do have some confidence in Jay Hayes being a senior and a guy that's been around and paid some dues and is 280 and can, you know, be physical. And Jerry Tillery is the one that really, really has to step forward and be a playmaker, and he hasn't shown that he's capable of doing that yet.
Yeah, I was wrong last week when we had the question, who's the most important player not named Wimbush and someone. Yeah. Jerry Tillery is the most important player. I said Josh Adams because I think he could be an All-American, but you know what? If he's not, then Tony Jones will be good, and Dexter Williams could be good. So it's Tillery. He can be more than solid, too.
He has the physical skills. He's 6'6 and a half. He's long. He's capable. He's capable. Who do you have there? Oh, I thought that was
Tillery. The note was Tillery.
I think, because
you know what? He's solid at worst. He's got to be solid at worst, and they need him to be better than that, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely. Where are we at? Who JND fan? What's the future hold for Josh Barajas with the scheme change and his career slow start? Will we ever see the talent he came in ND with?
I mean, I was high on him, and you were super high on him, right?
Yeah.
I liked him. Everybody I've talked to liked him. That saw him play live. If he wasn't there, he didn't practice Friday or Saturday, and he didn't practice Wednesday in the brief viewing. So he was. Brian Kelly said he was sick Wednesday, which stands to reason you could still be sick Friday and Saturday. Our next viewing is his next viewing is Friday, 5 days from now. If he's still not there, then something's up.
Yeah,
obviously. You can't ask about a guy that never plays after every practice. So it's. Look, at Rover, there's Tranquil, Bilal, plus freshmen coming in. At Mike, there's Morgan, Jones, and Jones. At Buck, there's Martini and Coney. It would have to be Barajas. He's not beating those guys out, so he has to become a good special teams player this year instead of a guy that's on special teams because, you know, just because you're on special teams doesn't mean you're good. We found that out last couple years. And at that point, then he has to make his push. He would have to be a good senior fifth-year guy. He's going to be a junior.
Yeah, he is going to be a junior with... 3 years of eligibility remaining. I mean, I think the question's being asked because it's like, is this guy going to emerge here? And, you know, people ask about transfer possibilities, and I have no idea whether Josh Barajas...
He might love being
in Notre Dame, you know, and accept a situation where the football playing stuff isn't at the forefront. But, you know... That would be a candidate if playing football is really, really important.
He was so physical in high school.
I loved him. I thought he was. I wanted him to be a couple inches taller, like we always do with linebackers. But I loved him. Yeah, I mean, he was physical and nasty and aggressive. And
He came in overweight, but that shouldn't be a problem now. We're into three years.
But it's just mentally, it's just, you're saying obviously it's a bad way to start. I never understood.
Yeah, because he probably was a guy that could have competed for a 2D job as a rookie had he not come in overweight, because he had that kind of talent. But yeah, no, you never. I mean, obviously, look, we might be jumping to conclusions. If he's sick, maybe he would be competing right now with.
Yeah.
But he's not starting this coming year. I mean, there's no strides we made up at linebacker where he could be in that position, but. You could be a great special teams player in your third year.
Yeah. He would probably be, you know, completely healthy, probably be in the number two slot behind Morgan. But
yeah.
So.
NYCND, what do you guys think of Mike Elko and Chip Long so far?
Well, I really like them a lot. I mean, I liked them from the first day when we met them. And, what does it mean we like them? I mean, I like the philosophies. I like what I'm hearing them say. I like what Mike... what Chip Long brings to the offense in terms of what was lacking from it previously. I think the interesting thing about him is, as there are a lot of questions about, you know, whose offense is it and who's going to make the decisions. And, you know, we never heard Mike Sanford talking about his offense.
No, you know, you're right.
But Chip Long does talk about his offense.
So do his players.
And so do his players.
That's the key.
And interestingly enough, Brandon Wimbush calls him by his first name, Chip. I mean, he's on.
Brandon Wimbush is safe in his job.
He's comfortable enough to just call the guy Chip, I guess. But that was just kind of funny when he said it, and he said it a couple times. But no, I like he's taken ownership of the offense, and I think that's really important. And if you watch practices, he's running. Yeah, I mean, he's running. Yeah, he's running the offense. And then, I mean, on the other side of the ball, I've loved everything about Elko.
I talked to Elko last week, and just some of the talking points that Notre Dame fans will love, and he's not just telling you what he wants to hear. This is what he believes. I kind of mentioned, you know, is it possible to cross train guys in the spring when you're installing something new? And he's, I don't really need to cross train guys anyway. I want to get players in the right positions and see if they can master those positions. It's hard to cross train in college. All we've heard about with the previous regime was cross training guys that Greer Martini had to play every position.
Right.
He had to play dime linebackers, Sam, Mike, and Will. And of course you're not going to be good at it. And so I asked Greer Martini, it's like, it's great not cross-training. I can learn one position. You get 11 guys learning one position, then you get 22. That's what Notre Dame fans should want. And, you know, Elko, there wasn't a thing he said. We're moving guys around, but look, constantly evaluating things. I had preconceived notions where I want guys. A lot of them have been right. He said he did a pretty good job, he thought, watching camp film, game film, practice film. They've already moved some guys. He's not discussing names. There seems to be an edict to not discuss names among some of the coaches, not named Elston, who offers names all the time, which is great. But, no, the main thing he said was, we're not going to get stuck in a mistake. If we have a guy pegged for something and he can't do the job, we're going to find somebody that can do it, and we're going to get the guy that can't play that role to play another role. And I think that's what Notre Dame fans want, and especially in the spring.
Yeah.
You don't usually get guys admitting, this might be wrong. We need to change this.
Yeah, and Tranquil's the exception, but you understand that exception because he's an experienced safety. He was the brains in the operation coming into the spring, but that's not the best fit. I do want to get into, I was at the coach's clinic on Friday, and I went to specifically Long and Elko because I wanted to hear them speak and hear their philosophies. And Elko was brilliant. And when people talk about, you know, his ability to communicate his defense, he spent 45 minutes and explained step by step how they create turnovers, why they create turnovers, how every turnover is not the same, or every opportunity for a turnover is not the same. You don't tackle a ball carrier or a receiver the same way. It depends upon what angle you have on him, what view you have of the football. It was absolutely brilliant. And I want to read a quote that to me, and I put on our message board, and somebody said, oh, that was a shot at BVG. It wasn't a shot at BVG by Elko. This is what he believes. But to me, this shows you the distinction between him and BVG. Here's the quote. I believe this very strongly. You can make your defense whatever you want it to be, but you've got to set the tone as the coordinator. You've got to go set the tone as the position coach, and you will always get what you preach. Here's the key paragraph. So if you stand up and say, I want to be a defense that plays with all-out effort. In the next 2 hours, you proceed to talk about this blitz and that blitz and this coverage and that coverage. And then the first 30 minutes of practice is walkthroughs on barrels, and you're going over scheme and this and that and the other thing. You're not going to get what you want.
He was right.
He was absolutely right. BBG coached like a pro coach where he expected everybody to know what to do. You can't do that in college. You can't do it in high school and college. Kids aren't fundamentally sound enough to do that. And so you build from the bottom up, and that's who Mike Elko is, and that's how you know, that's how they become a good tackling team. That's how they create a lot of turnovers.
Next question. B1GB0B. By the way, we've been calling it Bob, but that's a zero if you look at the types.
Oh, so, yeah, okay.
We got to get that. How is the defense aligned? How did they align the
rover?
Well,
then how are we supposed to say that?
It's a hard. I think it's B1GB0B, right?
Or is okay. That,
I'm going to give it
got
that.
Got it.
He's a long-time poster. How is the defense aligned? How do they align the rover on running and passing plays?
They're all over. I mean, you know, they're all over the place. It's very difficult to say exactly how they're aligned. The rover
is
an outside linebacker. I mean, basically, I think a little bit of it, it's, and we've talked about this before, it's a little bit overplayed. And the whole idea is to give the opposing offense so many different looks that they don't know, you know. So 4-2-5, I mean, I guess so, but you have Dalen Hayes in a stand-up position. So isn't that a three-man front with a stand-up? So we get kind of caught up in a lot of the lingo and the terminology, most of which we certainly don't understand anywhere close to what the coaching staff does.
If you look at the field, they're doing boundary and field. Field is the wide side, far from the hash, just for people to look at it. So you have a field corner, you have a field safety, and you have a field side linebacker. That's the rover. The boundary is the boundary corner, the boundary safety. And it's always explained to me because Bob Diaco ran this, and I didn't realize this. He said your more athletic guy is your boundary corner and your boundary safety. And that seems weird because there's more field to cover in the field side, but the more athletic guy is the boundary corner and the boundary safety. Nothing to do with linebacker in that situation. So in the old days, when it was dog in the field, that was Danny Spond. For people that I always use that because people remember those guys when they lined up because they were good. And so it's something you can think about. But Kavari Russell was going why they wanted, you know, they had him on the boundaries, an athletic guy. So you're just looking at it, it's a little bit similar in alignment, aside from up front, to how it used to be under Diaco, where you have, they just call it different things, and there's, I'm sure, and the rover has a little bit different job than the drop did, obviously.
Yeah, but most of what we saw on Saturday, he was positioned like an outside linebacker.
Yeah, so in other words, Jalen Smith would have been good at it. That's how we can all settle on, right?
Yeah, he would have been real good at it. So and the boundary corner has been Julian Love, and
the
field corner has been Nick Watkins. At least that's what we've seen up to this point. Insane TD Tucson, what is your honest take on Josh Adams? Is he completely healthy and looking to break out? Or will BK use more of a platoon system with the other rising backs?
He seems totally healthy. I think the offseason did that for him. I think he's always going to battle a high school knee injury, if you want to look at it that way. But that's neither here nor there for a junior running back in college. He's not beaten up anymore. He ended the year beaten up. I tried to get it out of Audrey Denson, who we talked to. He just kind of laughed and said he took a few shots. I walked off the field with Josh Adams against USC. That was his best game. He was broken.
Yeah.
And he had a great game, but he could, and I asked him about it. He said, I feel stronger than ever. And that was just a soldier taking one for the team, you know. And I asked Audrey Denson, and he chuckled and said, yeah, he took a few hits. You're supposed to a running back. I hope they use a platoon system because they have what I think are three capable backs. They got to use two. We saw some two running back formations on Saturday.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of interesting. They don't, at least what we saw, they don't normally start in that alignment. It's somebody in a slot that pops back to the backfield. Sometimes it was Dexter Williams and Tony Jones. Or CJ Sanders.
Which is fine. That's some quickness in the backfield.
Right. So they won't do a ton of that. But I am encouraged in what you said about it. I want to see all three backs. And we see how the schools do it. And Arizona State did it when Long was there as the tight ends coach.
You can do it if you run the ball more than Notre Dame did, and if you pass to your running backs.
You have to throw to your running backs.
And I
think we saw a lot of evidence on Saturday of a more horizontal passing game as opposed to a vertical passing game. Not that they won't go deep, because you have EQ, so you definitely want to go deep to him, but I think we saw more evidence of using the width of the field, and a good way to do that is to throw the ball to the backs.
And you might have a horizontal approach, but you have the speed with Claypool, hopefully Stepherson, and EQ to get downfield. Because horizontal approaches don't work if you can't hit it vertically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that they won't do that, but I do think that they're, in a chip long system, I do think that there's a much better opportunity here to use all three backs. And they're talented. And Tony Jones looks so good that Dexter Williams better. Right? I mean,
I feel like Dexter Williams got that memo, too, because he hurt his ankle at the beginning of practice, and he came back and ran hard.
Yeah.
I think he hurt his ankle again, but, you got to battle through it.
I tell you what, I was concerned that I was concerned initially that he hurt his Achilles.
He came back, so he must not have. Tapping his toes and everything.
Yeah,
so
and probably he stretched, and he was okay. So it was, I think it was something like on the inside of his right foot, but... He was back in action 7 minutes later. I timed it. I wanted to see exactly. And he was back in action 7 minutes later and ran hard. He eventually limped off late in
the series. They cut off his pads and his ankle pad and everything. We're testing him out. Yeah. But no, I think just the point there is that they know there's some competition there and you better not sit it out because Tony Jones Jr. is coming.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. It's a good situation there. There's a lot of good things happening on the offensive side of the ball, and there are a lot of good things happening at the linebacking core and cornerbacks on defense. The big concern of the D-line and getting that safety situation straightened out. Tim, anything else you want to address?
Yeah, we will. We have a viewing it's a half-hour viewing on Friday. Before then, we'll talk to assistant coaches again. We've talked to the coordinators, Elston and Denson, so I assume we'll be getting Coach Light, probably Coach Alexander, maybe Harry Hiestand will come in. He stands a great interview when he's in there, actually. He's just not a big fan of doing it.
He just doesn't like to talk. He doesn't want to talk about the offensive line situation. Okay, we'll have an instant analysis Friday after practice. We don't have any access on Saturday.
No,
right?
they're not practicing.
Oh, they're off on Saturday. Okay. We'll be back a week from today, Monday, April 3rd, with our next Irish Illustrated Insider. This is Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley. Thanks for joining us.